You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, and this is the Play Therapy Podcast. In today's episode, we are talking through the history of child-centered play therapy. The reason why we are doing that is this gives us a really good understanding of how this evolved over the last 100+ years, and it helps us to have the foundation theoretically for what the child-centered model provides and where it comes from. So this is a pretty important piece of the puzzle because we have to understand the progression and the changes that took place in existing theories and then how they were modified to become the child-centered model. So we're going to talk through that today. I think this is actually a really important piece. I know most people don't tend to like the word history for a lot of reasons. So boring dates, boring people, things that happened in the past, who really wants to study those? But I think for this podcast in particular, with the idea that we are starting from the beginning and we're building from the ground up, we have to understand how this developed and how this evolved. So not going to spend a ton of time on it, but I do think it's important to hit through that. So when we look at the history of child-centered play therapy, we have to go back to Freud. And I know that typically makes people raise their eyebrows and look at me funny, because how in the world can Freud have anything to do with a child-centered approach? They're so far different theoretically. Most people don't get the connection. But what's fascinating is that Freud was actually working with a little boy named Hans in 1905, who was terrified of horses, and he documented in the early 1900s that he used, working with the father, he used play to help the boy overcome his fear of horses. So we have the original documentation of a play therapy approach to helping a five-year-old boy overcome a fear in the early part of the 1900s, 1905 to 1909. So as you can see, let me pause there to share, that means that play therapy has been around for more than 100 years, almost 120 at this point. So often we get the impression from other people outside of our field that play therapy is new, and that play therapy doesn't have a lot of evidence behind it. It doesn't have a lot of research supporting it. It doesn't have a lot of history to document efficacy, and none of those perceptions are true. And see, this is why history is important. This is why we cover this, because we have to be able to say, no, it's been around for more than a century. So first documented case in the early 1900s. Then interestingly, Anna Freud, his daughter, Sigmund's daughter, used play therapy in the 30s. So now we've jumped ahead 20 years to the 1930s. She used play therapy in her own therapeutic approach to build relationships. She documented and learned that the play therapy model was very effective for helping build relationships with children, which makes sense because children communicate via their play. Toys are their words. And so to better connect and better build relationships, it would make obvious sense to us now as play therapists that yes, play therapy helps to build relationships. So we have 1905 through 1930s of the Freudian influence. That is then where Freud's influence stops. So then we move into the 1940s, where Carl Rogers comes into existence, knowledge, people start to be aware of his theory. So we have person-centered approach that is developed in the 1940s. Let me pause right here and say, if you are completely new to the play therapy world, if you're new to the child-centered world, and you have no theoretical knowledge or background, so you have no idea about Carl Rogers, pause me right now and go do some research on the Rogerian approach, Carl Rogers' theoretical model. That will help you as we move forward, because all of it that we're talking about today is predicated on knowledge of Rogerian theory. So that's just a disclaimer. So if you're familiar with Rogers, then you know in the 40s, he developed the person-centered approach. So to summarize that very succinctly, we're looking at, there are three core conditions. The relationship is at the center, and the therapist's role is to provide the environment and the relationship that allows the client who already possesses internally the ability to change and the ability to become a better version of themselves. The fancy word is self-actualization. They already possess those capacities, so the therapist's role is to create the relationship and the environment that is conducive to those changes. So that's Rogerian in 36 seconds. So when we look at the person-centered approach, we're aware that everything is about the client's ability to change, grow, heal, and become a better version of themselves through the relationship and environment that's created therapeutically. So once that is established, and by the way, for those of you new to this whole world, Rogerian theory, person-centered approach, has been proven consistently over and over and over again as the most effective approach when working with people therapeutically. So you can look that up. You can find tons of research that supports it. So obviously the relationship is at the center of all of this. So then Clark Moustakas in the 50s took this premise of Roger's work, and he proved in the 50s that relationship is needed to make therapy a growth experience. So that's essentially supportive of what Rogers posited. And he took it further to say the relationship is necessary for therapy to be a growth experience, because therapy can be lots of things. Therapy can be helpful. Therapy can be insightful. Therapy can provide awareness. You can have third-party perspective. There's all of these things that therapy can do. But to be a growth experience, the relationship was needed. So you can see the pattern here, right? Anna Freud realized that she needed play therapy to build relationships. Rogers creates this theory that is founded on the power of the relationship. Moustakas comes in and says the relationship is needed to have it a growth experience for clients. Okay, so now we move into the 1960s. Bernard and Louise Gurney, husband and wife couple, they took what had already been established relationally as a person-centered approach and modified it to become a filial model. And filial just means of the family. And you have this premise that when you work with parents and their children in the filial model, so family therapy, they originally did it on their own children, but then it evolved into other parents coming in and being trained. They realized that the person-centered model related to parents and their children, there was greater potential for long-term change when this approach was used, which makes sense because a therapist is only with a child for a week, one time a week, an hour a week. Parents are with them hours and hours every day, every week. So obviously the potential for long-term change is to equip the parents to understand the power of the relationship and the premise of the person-centered model. And then there's longitudinal change. So you have the Gurneys that come in, modify this approach for work with parents and their children. And then Axline, Virginia Axline, was in the mix in the 1970s. I'm actually going to read a quote that she said because it is so significant as to what we're talking about. "No one ever knows as much about a human being's inner world as the individual himself. Responsible freedom grows and develops from inside the person." Which is very aligned with what Roger said. I can't tell you what you need to work on. You already know what you need to work on. I'm just here to provide the relationship and the environment that allows you to do the things you need to do. So Virginia Axline furthered the theoretical model, again, identified that it is within the human, the capacity for change and growth, and responsible freedom grows and develops from inside the person. So then Gary Landreth comes in the 90s, and Landreth modified Bernard and Louise Gurney's filial model for a 10-week filial training, and also wrote many books and did much research on the child-centered approach, both individually, in group, and in filial treatment. So from the 90s on, Landreth has served as what I like to call the godfather of play therapy. But we certainly have the last 25 or so years, almost 30 years actually, of his work that shows the efficacy, the treatment model, the approach. Art of the Relationship is something that every single person that wants to do this should read. The book Dibs by Virginia Axline, every person that works with children as a child-centered play therapist needs to read Axline's book Dibs. So those are kind of the hallmark works of what has happened in the last 30 or so years to help us have practical guidelines, practical frameworks, and a skill-based approach to using child-centered play therapy. So almost all of the quotes that you hear about the child-centered model come from Landreth. Many of them come from Landreth and Bratton's work, which is their filial model, 10-week filial model, child-parent relationship therapy. So there you have the history of the child-centered approach. And this is how we combat the comments that we often hear from schools, from pediatricians, from lawyers, from judges, that, oh, play therapy doesn't work. Play therapy hasn't been proven. Play therapy has no efficacy. Play therapy is too long-term of a treatment. We need child therapy, specifically CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, for this six-year-old because we need a short-term fix. And when we have this knowledge, that we have years and years and years, more than a century, of documented cases, research, efficacy. Dee Ray wrote a really, really helpful meta-analysis study compiling all of the play therapy research that had been done to prove how effective it is. And with all issues, all populations, you know, there's all kinds of information out there that shows how effective it is. And we have to understand the history and how it evolved so that we can speak intelligently to people that aren't knowledgeable enough about the child-centered model. So there is your history lesson for the day. I know not necessarily so much fun, but we have to understand how we've gotten to where we are. And I feel that I'd be remiss if I don't spend a little bit of time talking about the current work that's being done in the field. There are so many people who are actively doing research and putting present day research and data and studies out there proving efficacy. UNT is the workhorse of all of the country. They are constantly putting out all kinds of research and studies and all of those things, proving the efficacy of our model. UNT, Phyllis Post, she's doing a lot of work. Dee Ray at UNT, University of Wyoming. We have little pockets where there are a lot of people that are putting out research. Ceballos does a lot of multicultural work. Phyllis Post does a lot of work. You have Jennifer Baggerly. You have all of these people who are constantly showing that what we do works and how it works and why it works. So I don't want to stop in the 90s and say nothing has happened since, but we haven't had any new developments theoretically since then. So we're still using the same theoretical model that evolved from the early 1900s through the early 2000s. And now the research that's being put out is showing that it does work, it is effective, and that we do have support for using this therapeutically. So that's where we've been. That's where we are now. And as we move into the next episode, we're going to talk through the frequently asked questions regarding play therapy and the child-centered model, because you need to be equipped with information and knowledge to answer those questions, because you will get lots of questions. And I want to make sure that we understand how to answer those effectively and thoroughly and well. So we will talk through frequently asked questions in the next episode, and then after that, straight into skills and the deep dive. So We're getting to the meat and potatoes really soon, but there's a lot of background that has to be done before we get there. So we'll definitely be diving into that in the next couple of episodes, but frequently asked questions is coming up next. So I'm so thankful that you're here with me. Thank you for all of you who have downloaded episodes. Thank you for those who have subscribed. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. It helps us get found when people search Play Therapy Podcasts. So subscribing would be really helpful. Please reach out to me if you have questions or comments. I would love to hear from you, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And I look forward to talking with you again soon. Thank you for being a part of the Play Therapy Podcast. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.